Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride is here, too, because she is an outstanding member of our Brain Trust and senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back, and I know you're pretty excited, aren't you?
Now, why would you say that?
Because it's been 2 weeks. We missed you last week.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. You missed me, too, didn't you?
It was terrible.
Yeah. Joan, by the way, on this day in 1869, this was a great day in the history of human beings.
Really?
Cornelius Swarthout.
Oh gee.
Patented the waffle iron.
Wow.
You like waffles?
I'd rather have a pancake.
Oh, I love waffles.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so this was a great day in history. It almost reaches up to the pinnacle of the day in 1456. Not quite there, but it's close. Because on this day in 1456, the Gutenberg Bible was completed. I'm sorry. The Bible was completed. I said press earlier,
So the waffle iron is more important than the Bible.
No. I said it's close. It's getting close. The Gutenberg Bible, which is the publication that came, the first publication that came off of the device that, as you know, changed the world. You and I both owe our living to the Gutenberg Press.
Oh.
But I owe my happy tummy to Swarthout's.
Maybe your large tummy too.
Watch it there now. You don't want to start trading barbs with me on that one.
Right.
The waffle iron, yeah, on this day, 1869. How about that? Joan, let's move over and talk about some other wafflers, if you think I'm not the king of Segway. And that's our politicians.
That's right.
You guys lead with that this week, and the anti-incumbent mood is getting pretty ugly, isn't it?
It sure is.
Tell us what that means.
Well, what we're saying is that the natives are restless out there, and normally, if you're an incumbent in Congress, you more often than not have a very easy road to re-election. But the tables appear to have turned this time. Now, and we're not saying that it's not tough for Democratic incumbents either. It's just that there are a lot more Republican incumbents. So that's why they're having the tougher time.
The only people who seem to have a tougher time in the polls these days than President Bush are members of Congress.
That's right.
They have the Democrats keep pointing to Mr. Bush's low poll ratings, but their own ratings are, as politicians, not as necessarily as Democrats,
right,
is even lower than his.
Right. And look at it's happening everywhere. Look at the governor of Alaska.
Oh, yeah. What happened yesterday?
Well, he ran in a primary and he came in third. So he's out.
Yeah, he's history.
Yeah, he is.
And he's a Republican?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Politicians are polling below car salesmen and con artists these days, aren't they?
And below journalists.
Used car and journalists, right.
Yeah.
But not lower than talk show hosts. I think talk show hosts.
Really?
Still
oh, good.
Be below that. Okay, so now I'm going to jump around just a little bit, Jim, because I think it's important to point out that when it comes to the House, I guess it is, I think it's the House, there are 44 competitive seats, but 3 out of 4 of those are Republican seats.
And see, that's what I mean by saying, the anti-incumbent mood is across the board. But just because Republicans have more seats and there's more up for grabs, they're more in the crosshairs. And if the Democrats only got half of those, that would add 12 more Democrats, mm-hmm. and they would only be 3 short of control of the House.
Mm-hmm. And President Bush is not contributing a lot, according to Kiplinger, at least. I'll say that. And I think you're probably right. He's not, his own poll ratings, his own popularity in the country is not helping his fellow Republicans as much, is it?
Well, it's interesting. What they have the president doing now is going to some small fundraisers, because he still raises a lot of money when he goes to these fundraisers. However, a lot of, I'm not saying all, but many, many Republicans who are out campaigning really don't want to be seen with him. So if he comes to an event of theirs, they will say they have a scheduling conflict and can't be with the president. But I'm sorry. If the president, if you want to be with the president, you will.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the interesting thing, Joan, is if it weren't for Iraq, I believe the President Bush would have record ratings, because the economy is doing pretty darn well. We have not been attacked since 9/11, and you know we can talk all day long about the fact that, you know, we're not safer in the ports, and we, you know, some people say that we're not safer, but the truth is, as my grandmother would have said, the proof's in the pudding. We're coming up on 5 years since 9/11, and if it weren't for basically what's going on in about a 15 mile square area in Iraq, which is the Baghdad area, Mr. Bush's ratings would be totally different, I think. What do you think?
That's a pretty big if, though.
No,
that's,
I know.
A pretty big but for.
What I'm getting at is that's a big mm-hmm. issue. The Iraq thing is a big issue, but there are a lot of other things that typically take down a politician that are doing pretty well, like the economy.
Well, I guess I think you could make a case either way, though. I mean, the economy is doing pretty well in some cases, but there are trouble spots, and people are concerned about some things too.
Well, there's always concern about the economy. No, you're not going to get. No, I'm not going to let you get away with that, Joe. The economy is doing. Yeah, it's slowing, but no, the economy is doing pretty darn well. I mean, you look around, the profitability of corporations, small businesses are doing pretty well. Except for there are two areas, and you're right about two things, interest rate and fuel. Those are two concerns that we have.
Those are pretty big ones.
Those are big ones, no question about it. No, I agree with you. But even in the face of all that, the economy is still doing pretty well. But you guys say that give us the percentages that you say that the Democrats have in taking back the House.
You mean the chances that they have?
Yeah.
Well, we're saying it's an even shot, 50-50. But we're saying that this is kind of how we're hedging our forecast here. We're saying the momentum is on the Democrats' side.
So this is where you learn to hedge, Joan. Is that right?
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to Joan about, and this is maybe off the letter just a little bit, but I want to talk about the difference between what people say when they're polled in August and what they do when they vote in November. 20 after, I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Break the silence.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. You can find thousands of archives and articles and hundreds of Brain Trust members, smart people like Joan Pride, who are there represented on our website. And also, don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out our blog while you're there. Or you can go directly to the blog by going to jimsblog.biz. Joan Pride, as I said, is our guest. And Joan, we're talking about the lead story in the Kiplinger letter this week, which is about the anti-incumbency that seems to be happening across the country. As you say, the natives are restless. But Joan, how people poll in August is not always the way they vote in November, is it?
I don't know. I take it you have some information that.
No, I just think that you know, I may be aggravated at my representative this in August, but when I'm faced with, you know, another alternative in November, I might pull those curtains behind me. I may not be as adamant about that. So I think we need to take this anti-incumbency in terms of turning out. This is not a partisan, opinion or observation on either side. I just think that all politics are local, as you know, and for the most part. And I think that I just wouldn't bet a lot on how people poll in August. I may be wrong. I'm not the polling expert.
Well, and of course, the other thing going on here that you always have, particularly in off-year elections, meaning non-presidential years, is the issue of turnout. Now, there's two schools of thought. Do you go after the moderates and the independents, or do you energize your base and try to get your base out? That's mm-hmm. what both sides are grappling with now.
Well, and the Democrats have typically not out fundraised the Republicans. They've actually typically been behind the Republicans, but
right.
they currently are raising a lot of money, aren't they?
Apparently they are, yeah.
What about, one thing for sure, Joan, this is going to be one of the most interesting midterm elections in a long time, isn't it?
Oh, no, probably maybe the most interesting since, when was it, 1994.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, because of the contract with America. I think it
and
could
be. And that was when the mm-hmm. Democrats got thrown out of the House.
It won't be that interesting, but it'll be close to that interesting. And one of the most interesting states to me, Joan, to watch is going to be Connecticut.
Oh, sure.
Tell us
definitely.
Why.
Definitely. Well, Senator Joe Lieberman, who's a Democrat, just lost a primary battle to newcomer Ned Lamont.
Yep.
And instead of going off quietly, he has decided to run as an independent in the general election. Now, you might say, well, this helps the Republican because you figure that Lieberman and Lamont would split the Democrat vote. But apparently this, and I think, I'm not even sure of the man's name. I think his name is Schlesinger, but I'm not sure. The Republican is polling so badly, and I guess Connecticut is so heavily Democratic, that the race, the general election race will again be between
right.
Lieberman and Lamont. And there are even Republicans who are supporting Lieberman on the theory that
oh, yeah.
they would rather have him in the Senate than Lamont because they have a better chance of possibly getting him to vote with them on some issues. How is that for weird?
Exactly. And that's the reason why you want to watch this, folks. The Republican...
This is why you pay me the big bucks to be on the show for this insightful analysis.
That's exactly right. And the thing is, the Republican, bless his heart... is basically being abandoned by the Republican Party.
Yeah, exactly. And they're asking him to withdraw.
Are they? I haven't heard that. Well, I heard John McCain on Sunday on Meet the Press say that he would not campaign against his good friend and the great American Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, and I'm sure maybe they are good friends, but so I shouldn't say that's not the reason, but there are political reasons as well.
Well, and now here's why this Connecticut gets more interesting all the time. There are three Republican. This is what blows me away. As liberal as Connecticut is, they've got two Democrat senators and three Republican congressmen.
Yeah, yeah.
And Congress people, I should say, representatives, because one of them is...
Now, be careful. I was born in Connecticut. That's my home.
I know.
State,
Nancy so Johnson nice. Is one of those three. But Chris Shays is someone whom I've met before and is a great American and a great representative. All three Republicans, you guys say, are vulnerable. But, Joan, what's it going to mean if Joe Lieberman wins? Don't you think that those guys are safer?
Which guys? The Republicans?
The three Republicans, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
So this whole thing of the Democrats bailing out on, bailing out on Lieberman could backfire on them, couldn't it?
It might. That's kind of one of the things that people are trying to figure out right now is will Lieberman... could he even bolt the Democratic Party and go over to the Republican side?
If I were a sponsor on election night, I would say, give me the sponsorship of the Lieberman coverage.
That's
where I'd want my ads to be because I think that's where the eyeballs are going to be.
Yeah,
I think the Lieberman issue could be a bellwether. for the rest of the country. Who knows? 29 after, we'll be right back with Joan Pryde. We're going to move over and talk about some other things like the war on terror and the economy and technology. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Smiling for my head to her feet. I said, hey, what is this? Now, baby, maybe, maybe she's in need of a kiss.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, just wrapping up a couple of quick points on this, the fall elections. The big change, you guys report this week, that is the significance of the in the House is the change in the committee chairman. I mean, if all the Democrats get is a handful of votes more, you know, a majority over the Republicans, that doesn't give them a tremendous amount of leverage except in with the chairman, right?
Well, yeah, and because a lot of the most senior Democrats in the House are very liberal, probably more mm-hmm. liberal than some of the folks that are just being elected.
Right.
Would you like to hear some names?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, two of the big ones are for the House Ways and Means Committee would be Charlie Rangel from New York.
Yep.
And for the House Financial Services Committee, Barney Frank of Massachusetts.
Yep.
You don't
yep.
get much more liberal than those
well,
gentlemen.
And also, what's the guy's name? Conyers from Michigan.
John Conyers, sure.
He's going to be one of the committee chairmen. He's
and
the guy.
Probably one of the old bulls, if he's still in Congress by then. Oh, gosh, I'm blanking on his name. I'm sorry. John Dingell. There we
yeah.
go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Conyers from Michigan is the Democrat who has up on his website, at least he did have at one time, that he thought we should impeach George Bush.
Ah.
So if the Democrats get control of the House, that debate will happen. I'm sure.
Maybe, yeah.
So it'll seem so that's a big deal. The majority, even a one seat majority would change the chairman's
oh, sure.
chairmanships, and that's a big deal. That's a huge, huge lever.
Well, and it's not just the chairmanships, but then the leadership, whoever, the people who set the agenda, who decide
right.
what goes on
that's
the
right.
calendar, what gets voted on.
That's right. It's a big deal.
Democrat. Yeah.
Joan, let's move over and talk about what Mr. Bush is going to ask Congress for in the fight against terrorism. You guys report that he's going to ask for some new laws.
Right. And, of course, this comes from the recent problem with the planes that they caught them before they could leave. But I guess there was a plot that to blow up, I guess, about a dozen planes going from Britain to, I guess, the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants more power to, get into some of these terrorist groups and use surveillance on them.
One of the things we know now is that, it's generally known now, is that England has more latitude. The law enforcement and the political leaders in England have more latitude to infiltrate, to snoop around in people's lives. And that contributed to helping them catch these guys.
Right.
And the United States has less of that kind of latitude. But we have more now that we have the Patriot Act, which is a very important piece of legislation that basically pulled the wall down, literally, folks, an informational wall between the CIA and the FBI, pull that down so that those people could share information. So
right.
that was a good thing. But the president wants more. One of the things that's been interesting, Joan, about the laws situation are the people who have been they're talking less about the Mr. Bush, you know, violating the Constitution by getting wiretaps without going through the FISA court, and more about saying, okay, maybe we need to create a new law. The FISA court is almost 30 years old. Maybe we need a new law that's more appropriate for the times.
Yeah.
I've been hearing more about that, and I think that's smart. I think that'll be good legislation if we can get that passed. Let's move over, Joan, and talk about Sarbanes-Oxley is in the news on page 3, isn't it?
Yes.
Tell us
about
this.
Well, it's sort of in the news in an indirect way. The item that we're talking about has to do with the scandal involving backdated stock options, which the SEC is going after, and I think a lot of businesses are going to be caught by this.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying is that as big a scandal as this is not going to be big enough to stop efforts to roll back Sarbanes-Oxley.
Well, the issue here is companies who don't report all their contingent liabilities. See, that's what happened with Enron in its simplest terms. Enron didn't report all their contingent liabilities, which they'd moved offshore, many of them. And so the company was in worse shape than they reported to be. And so consequently, the company collapsed. And when we come back, we'll explain how this is affecting smaller companies, maybe some small businesses, and how this issue could be something that you need to know about. 20 till, we'll be right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. The small business advocate, Joan Pride, is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, the website is kiplinger.com, just like it sounds, folks. I encourage you to check it out. And Joan, you have a number of publications that I always like telling the audience about them, because I've been reading the Kiplinger Letter, the flagship publication, since 1923 when it first came out, but since about 1973, seriously. Mm-hmm. And I encourage you to take advantage of a 30-day free trial that they have, folks. And also they have three biweekly letters, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter. If you're a farmer, you got to have that one. And also there's a magazine you can find on newsstands, and you can subscribe to it, can't you, Joan?
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And why don't you crank out that toll-free number?
Oh, you bet. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Joan, on the Sarbanes-Oxley issue, folks, about 4 years now, Joan, that Sarbanes-Oxley has been in existence?
Has it been that long? Gosh, I guess it has.
I
think you're right.
Wow. As they were debating this, folks, this was a Sarbanes, it might have been 3 years ago, I've forgotten. Sarbanes-Oxley was a 100% knee-jerk reaction by our Congress to the Enron, WorldCom, all the different malfeasance issues that we've been dealing with for the last several years.
Right.
Even though those guys were only, I figured out, Joan, that they were like 8 ten-thousandths of 1% of the total number of public companies. They reacted to those offenses, those lapses of ethical and criminal judgment was so bad that they overreacted. They knee-jerk reacted to it and created the Sarbanes-Oxley bill.
Right.
When that was being debated, when it was being made into law, I wrote a piece where I said that you know, this is not going to work, folks. This is not going to be a good thing. Anything your government creates in 90 days can't be good.
Well,
and I was right, Joan.
Yeah.
Sure. And we have evidence now that I was right, don't we?
Right. Boy, that's pretty amazing.
Tell us about that.
The evidence that we have. Well,
yeah.
One of the problems that we're seeing is that you have small public companies that are trying to go private now, and you have large private companies that don't want to go public.
That's right. And you got big companies, large companies that used to be traded on the stock exchange that either have or are in the process of going back private.
Right.
And you got people who want to start. Didn't you tell me recently that there's some companies that want to be delisted from the New York Stock Exchange, and they're trying to get listed in London and places like that?
Exactly, right.
There are IPOs, people who want to start companies.
How could you not want to be listed in the United States? That's just amazing to me.
You can thank Sarbanes-Oxley for that, because the cost is so onerous, that the exposure is so great. I know a bank and a furniture manufacturer company that both went public in the 90s that have since come back, gone public, private again, because it was too expensive. It was too onerous. What else? There's another story. Joan, the other thing I want to mention about this is why, you know, small businesses who are not public are right. saying, are might be saying, you know, why do we care about this?
Oh, you care.
Why do we care about the backdating of stock options? Well, folks, there are a lot of small companies out there that can't afford to pay for the high-powered talent that they need to hire.
Right.
And so they get those people to join them by giving them stock options.
Right.
And so if Sarbanes-Oxley makes you not be able to offer those stock options, then you're limited in your ability to get this talent. And number two, if Sarbanes-Oxley is so expensive, when you need to go public to make those options valuable, you'll have to wait longer until you get bigger, and it puts the compensation off farther. And so it
right.
makes it. And so even you know a tiny home-based business, this doesn't mean anything to them. But if you're a growing small business, this is important for you to know about.
Exactly.
And I appreciate Kiplinger bringing it up this week. Okay, Joan, what's next? Let's talk about industrial banks. Walmart, is that an industrial bank?
Well,
they want to be, don't they?
They want one. They want approval to open one, and we think that the FDIC is going to allow them to do that. It won't be till next year, but we think it's coming.
Hmm. So you think Walmart having a bank is inevitable?
Well, that's what we're saying.
That's what it looks like, huh?
It's. I guess Walmart's, you know, going to have just about everything eventually.
Another thing, Joan, that you guys point out this week is something that's been talked about for a long, long time. It's really been going on for quite some time. And that is that more companies are going to rent their business software. Now, tell us about that.
Right. Well, that's kind of interesting. I never really understood this concept, renting software. But rather than buying it and installing it, which is a big investment, you can rent a program that resides on the Internet. And it's really going to be, a help to small businesses.
Well, and the thing is, I remember, here's the interesting thing about this, Joan, and I've said this on the show before, I remember maybe almost 10 years ago hearing Bill Gates predict this. He predicted that we would not be buying software as much as we would be renting it. We'd be signing a license, and we'd be getting the power, the processing power, from a software standpoint, from companies that would just give us the ability to operate from their servers. And then his company has been one of the last ones to actually do this.
That's ironic.
Yeah, it is, very much. Quick break. We're going to take a quick one. We'll be right back. It's 10 till. We got more to come with our good friend Joan Pride. Stay with us.
While all the women came and went, barefoot servants too.
As I was walking down the street one day, a man came up to me and
we're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest and senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters. Joan, on this renting the software issue before we leave that.
Yes.
I do believe that this is going to be the wave of the future, and that instead of people buying $500 pieces of software, you know, they're going to rent it for a year for $29.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I think that's going to happen is because software is going to continue to be updated, and you know, you can get the new version.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
A lot
yeah.
sooner. That would be one thing you get for your $29 for a year,
right?
Or whatever is that if they update something in 3 months, you got the new version.
Exactly.
You don't have to wait for a year or 2 years to, you know, and then pay another $200 to update.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, and it'll give you access to a wider range of software.
Yes.
And it's very exciting that this is coming out, and it'll be interesting to see. And another thing that's fun to me to watch, Joan, is is the impact that Google is having in the software world. You know, Google has got, Microsoft is scared to death of Google because of the things that they're doing. They're doing some innovative things.
Oh, yeah.
Google has the potential to do to Microsoft what Microsoft did to some of the big companies when they came on board.
Wow, that's ironic.
Yeah, it sure is. Joan, let's talk about the economy a little bit. July's inflation is tamed a little bit, right? Is it down a little bit?
Down a little bit. That's, you know, good news. We said 0.2% increase in the consumer price index, and I think folks in different parts of the country will see particularly that gas prices are moderating just a hair.
Well, if we could just get a little stability in the Middle East, gas prices would come down a good bit.
Boy, that would be nice.
And that would help. We really need that to happen so that inflation can come down. We don't need the Fed to raise rates more.
Right.
We're not
out of the woods yet with the Fed, I don't think.
I know. They're telegraphing that they're not. Yeah. Recently, this week actually, they've telegraphed a little bit that they might not be through raising rates.
That's right.
And so they just job on a little bit every once in a while. That's one of the tools they have, isn't it, Joan?
True.
GDP, you say, is going to be 2.5 in 07.
Yes.
Over on your handy-dandy little chart there,
yes,
Joan.
Which is not bad. I'll take it. I always say that.
That's still double Europe.
Right.
But it'll seem, because of the speed we've gone at, here's the way to think about it, folks. What speed do you like to travel on the interstate? Let's say you're on the interstate. Are you happy at 70 miles an hour? If the speed limit is 70 miles an hour, are you happy with that speed? Joan, most people are. That's a good speed on the internet,
sure.
Right?
Right.
For America, for the American economy, 2.5 is 70 miles an hour.
That's okay. I take that.
All right. So if we had 4.5, which we have had recently, that's like 140 miles an hour. Let's say 132 miles an hour.
Ooh.
Not quite double.
Yeah.
So my point is, slowing down from 132 to 70 is not a bad thing.
Yeah, no.
It's safer.
I hear you.
It's more comfortable. We just have to realize.
Quite an analogy. I like that.
Thank you. That's what I get the big bucks for. But the point here, Joan, is that we don't need to be, you know, all in the doldrums and all maudlin about 2.5%.
And
we don't need to look around and say, oh, my God, what's happening to the economy?
Right, right.
Well, the truth is we're just getting, and I'll tell you something else, Joan, at 2.5, inflation won't get out of control.
Well, that's true, too. Now, we just got to hope that the housing market stabilizes and doesn't really go into the toilet.
Which is the next issue, because you guys report that that's heading for a 10% decline, right?
And I keep reading more and more about how hot markets are slowing. But again, you know, we've said housing is regional, not national. So
that's exactly right.
Where you're living right now may not necessarily be as bad as others.
Well, that's exactly right. And so I think I don't think housing is going to be bad. It's just it probably did need to cool off a little bit, Joan.
Oh, it was crazy there for a while, especially where I live.
Joan, 30 seconds. Will the ceasefire hold in Lebanon?
We're afraid that it will not, but we say maybe a few weeks or a few months, but we think there will be more fighting eventually.
I don't think there's any question about that. This was not a win for anybody on the good guy's side, for the West, for Israel.
And Hezbollah is going to regroup, you know that.
There's no question about it. They are not going to change their stripes.
No.
Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Sounds great.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I have to go. It's time to go for the day. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.